This is Matt Wells at UN News. The way we produce food today is damaging ecosystems around the world and threatening biodiversity, despite being more abundant and of better quality than ever before. That's a paradox highlighted by former top UN official Dr. David Nabarro in an interview with UN News this week after he'd taken part in the Future of Food International Symposium in Rome, organised by the Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO. He said that around 35% of all the damaging greenhouse gases driving climate change are due to modern food production, while low food prices are pushing some farmers into bankruptcy and even suicide. Dr. Nabarro, who's now Professor of Global Health at Imperial College London and Strategic Director for Social Enterprise 4SD, told Liz Scafidi why it was so important to talk about food production.
Food systems that we have in the world today are delivering food for people in a quantity and quality that's actually not been available ever before. There is a remarkable efficiency of production. There's certainly enough food being produced in the world today to feed all the current population and more. One could say that it's never been so good. However, there are some shortcomings. The first is that despite this plenty, there are still more than 700 million people in our world who are undernourished. There are somewhere in the region of 1.8 billion people in our world who are overweight or otherwise affected by excessive consumption or wrong consumption. In addition, the way we produce food at the moment is contributing to quite a lot of damage to what we call the ecosystems. These are the environmental systems on which humanity depends. Fresh water is in short supply in many areas because of agriculture demands. And there are also challenges with destruction of biodiversity, that is species loss, as a result of agricultural practices, specifically the use of chemical treatments to try to reduce pests. There's also an issue that in many areas, people who are producing food are unfortunately not doing too well in terms of their financial security. One of the reasons for this is that the climate is changing, and when climate changes, that affects productivity. Another reason is that the prices they can get for the food they produce are generally not enough to cover the costs of producing the food, and that has led to some very serious situations, including bankruptcy, and even farmers taking their own lives in some regions. And then lastly, perhaps the most frightening thing is that the way we produce our food contributes to somewhere in the region of 35% of all the greenhouse gas emissions that are going up into our atmosphere. So it's contributing to one third of the driver of climate change.
It seems that undernutrition persists in developing countries, while there's an unprecedented rise in obesity in low- and middle-income countries. Why is that, and what can be done to remedy the situation?
Certainly, the majority of undernutrition, which is quite honestly mostly young children, is in poorer countries, and it's among poor people. Undernutrition is, by and large, a disease of poverty, and that is particularly pronounced when a country is affected by a bad weather event or another form of natural disaster, or when a country or community is affected by violent conflict or economic upheaval. And that, therefore, is a reality that we expect to see undernutrition in poor locations. Now, the other end of the spectrum, obesity, is actually quite pronounced all over the world. It's no longer true to say that obesity is just a disease of middle-income and affluent countries. The proportion of people who are obese in poorer countries is rising super fast. And in addition, other diet-related diseases like type 2 diabetes are also increasing in incidence in poorer countries. The reason is that, you're more likely to have excess consumption if you're wealthier. But if we look at the statistics in some advanced countries, actually obesity is more prevalent among poorer populations than it is among wealthier populations.
So you touched a little bit about it when you mentioned diabetes. I was going to ask you to speak a little bit about diet-related non-communicable diseases and how they factor Yes. into the mix.
The diet-related non-communicable diseases seem to be responsible for as much as one-third of deaths in several parts of the world. And they are basically diseases of the body that result from eating the wrong foods in excessive quantity. So inside that mix are diseases of the blood vessels, which lead to high blood pressure or damage to key organs like the heart or the brain. And the second group is diseases like diabetes, which is when the body can't metabolize sugar properly. And it's a particular kind of diabetes that comes on later in life called type 2 diabetes that is diet related. And then there are other diet related conditions, which include certain cancers, that are also being given increasing attention. So that means that it really is important that we understand not only the amount of nutrients and energy being consumed, but also the types of food being consumed.
There's a global call to transform the food systems, to provide healthy diets, to address inequality, and to stop the degradation of natural resources. How can that be done?
Well, I've told you that food systems are responsible for about one-third of greenhouse gas emissions. They're damaging water supplies in quite large chunks of the world, including, for example, the state of California in the United States. They are damaging people's health and creating poor nutrition, possibly responsible for as much as one-third of all deaths. And the livelihoods of the people who depend on producing food for their living are not as good as they should be. And you know, there's about 1.8 billion people who actually do depend on food production. So the transformation is complex. And one of the things that we've been working on is trying to make sure that all the different actors who have an interest in food systems are actually involved in and can contribute to the transformation. Things go wrong when one or other group, like, for example, farmers, is excluded from the discussion. So trying to make sure that there is inclusive debate, trying to make sure that there's good science to underpin any decisions that are made, trying to ensure that when people are asked to make changes, they are accompanied through the process of change, that they don't feel that they're somehow being pushed around without their interests being taken into account. All those are key parts of the transformation process. Perhaps the most important is we have to understand that in many countries, actual food production is given subsidies by governments that bring benefits to the food producers and food processors. But those subsidies may be driving food production in the wrong way for crops that are bad for health, or for production systems that are bad for the environment.
As more people are moving to cities and natural resources are becoming more limited and even depleted, how can we feed a growing population around the world?
By and large, with the current situation, the total amount of food being produced is plenty for the people. It may be a bit unbalanced. We sense that there is a need for greater access to vegetables, to fruits, and to nuts. By and large, there's enough to go around. Indeed, there's enough to go around and to have spare capacity to produce food for animals, or even to use food for creating biofuels. The issue at the moment is not so much whether or not enough food is produced to feed everybody, but whether or not the food that is available is distributed in a way that enables everybody to get what they need. And that's a political question. There's no doubt that in some parts of the world, as a result of governance challenges, not everybody is getting the food they need. And that is something that we work with governments to try to resolve, as well as community-based organizations.
So going off script for a second, I read so many things that this is good for us, that's good for us, and then only to find later they've discovered it's not good for us. And then later again, oh yeah, it's okay again. Like, for example, eggs. So where can we find reliable information on what actually is safe to eat?
Well, there are two things you're asking about. Firstly, is what food is good in terms of its nutrient and other contents, and what food is safe in terms of whether or not it's actually dangerous to eat. I still believe that the specialized United Nations organizations that have responsibilities for food and nutrition are the best sources of guidance. And I would encourage anybody to work through the World Health Organization and the Food and Agriculture Organization. They are the sources of best guidance on food quality and safety.